Welcome to this special edition of The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Good morning, I'm your host, Scott Harvey. Over the next half hour, we're going to deviate from our usual style of program to pay tribute to a special group of helpers at KETR, our students. KETR has served as a laboratory for students at Texas A&M University Commerce for more than 35 years, and for roughly 3 years now, they've played a significant role in this program. As the students prepare to leave for spring break, we wanted to honor them for their hard work by playing some of our best student features over the past few years. Let us begin. Just as our student population has grown over the past couple of years, we're constantly reminded by our surroundings of the growth of our region as a whole. From summer 2010, Adam Sparks explains how area cities are benefiting from and preparing for the growth.
Shopping malls, gas stations, and restaurants are all moving their way down I-30 as the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex becomes its own megaplex, taking over what was once farm country. Rockwall has already been taken over, Roy City is in the process, and Greenville is preparing for their own growth explosion. Roy City City Manager Bill Shipp.
Our population increased from, in the census in 2000, was we were at 2,900 people. Most recent COG estimate for this year is 10,500. So you're absolutely correct. We've had tremendous growth.
According to the U.S. Census data, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex was the fastest growing metro area in 2009, gaining 146,530 people, placing the current population at close to 6.5 million people. And as the city grows, the amount of land it takes up is expanding.
For us, the entire story is about infrastructure, water, sewer, and streets.
Although Sulphur Springs is far from the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, City Manager Mark Maxwell explains why they must prepare now.
We assume that it's coming. I've heard for years that it's not a question of if the Dallas growth arrives, but rather when, and I would take that a step further and say it's really just a question of whether we're ready when it does arrive, whether our sewer lines are sufficient to handle growth, whether our water lines are sufficient, and whether the water and wastewater treatment plants themselves are sufficient, and then there's the whole issue of streets.
Already having been in the zone of the DFW expansion, Roy City has already begun to see its impact on the educational level.
But we are now a 4A school. We have one high school. We have a middle school, two intermediate schools, and I think four elementary schools. And this has gone from a campus over here that previously was a high school, middle school, and elementary school all on one campus.
Spurring much of the growth is the growth in the number of jobs available. During the national recession, Texas was hit far less than the United States. More powerful than most nations, the economy of the state of Texas alone is the 11th most powerful in the world and still continues to grow. And as the job market fares better in Texas and states such as California or Michigan, the population will continue its rapid growth. Hunt County Judge John Horn stated the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex may double in size by the next 20 to 30 years, hitting from 12 to 13 million people. And as the city continues to spread out, not only does it affect once quiet farming communities, but it also affects small towns like that of Sulphur Springs that has an infrastructure set up for a small community.
When it hit Rockwall, it was fast and furious. And then again, it's hitting Roy City and is even starting to show up in Greenville now. And it's just real difficult to put a number on it, but we do know, and it is common sense would dictate, that it will place tremendous burden on the existing infrastructure, especially if that infrastructure is, for all intents and purposes, depleted.
Adam Sparks, KETR News.
Thanks, Adam. We move on the student feature timeline to the winter of 2010, when, much like today, you could expect the same server to take your order from this small but storied business in the heart of Delta County. Abby McQuery filed this report.
When you think of a milkshake or soda, you probably think of a drive-thru line and fast food chains. However, on the downtown square of Cooper, Texas, things look a little different. Jingle bells ring as you enter the soda shop called Miller's Pharmacy. After entering, you are greeted by Mabel Wheat. I had the honor of meeting Mabel one afternoon, and she let me in on the rich history of the soda shop. The conversation we shared over the counter was incredible, and the vanilla malt she served me, not the first she had ever made.
I've been here 59 years at this store, working, doing the same thing, since 1951.
When Mabel first started working at Miller's, she told me of how different things were.
I worked long, hard hours. I started at, say, 8 o'clock, and I worked till 10 at night. We used all dishes then. We'd have washed all the glasses, clean up the fountain, and fill up the pumps before we left.
And Mabel does everything, even now, in a very authentic way.
I make all this ice cream. Yeah, I do.
You make the ice cream?
Yes, ma'am. I make ice cream 5 gallons at a time. We use all syrups, no bottles at all. We make our own carbonated water. See, we use syrups and make our Cokes and Dr. Peppers. And it has to be just, you know, got to learn how to make them. And I just know how to make them after all these many years.
I bet you do.
I do. Uh-huh.
And people from the community appreciate the quality they're being served.
Mmm, that's good.
Using many of the tools that she's used for decades, not only has Mabel served the community of Cooper for many years, but people from all over the world have come to enjoy the treats at Miller's Pharmacy.
I meet people from Paris, France, Italy, Australia, and I enjoy them a lot. I get them to sign my autograph book. And it's a guy from California, rode a bicycle 1,600 miles, and came in here and wanted a root beer float, and he told me. So I got him to sign my autograph book. And he rode on that 1,600 miles from California. He was visiting somebody in Klondike.
And her many years have given her the opportunity to see many generations come through the doors at Miller's Pharmacy.
I've seen about 6 generations. Since I've been here, as Lee said, she counted up, and I had served 6 generations in our family. I said, I don't doubt that.
There is something very special about Miller's Pharmacy, and Mabel Wheat only makes the dessert that you've come to enjoy so much better. And as she explained to me what keeps her going, it's once again about the people she serves and not the ice cream.
And just first one thing and two has happened to me that, you know, just outstanding. That's what keeps me going. I love people. I do.
I'm Abby McQuarrie for your station, 88.9 KETR.
Thanks, Abby. Jumping to this past fall on the Student Feature Express, when Ben Kelso took a ride to learn more about this Greenville businessman and his craft, which has turned out to be a unique but necessary service.
Today, listeners, we're going to take you on a ride-along. No, not that type of ride-along. Today, we're going on a ride with one of Hunt County's newest and youngest entrepreneurs, Andrew Davis. Andrew is one of Hunt County's youngest and newest entrepreneurs, and you may have seen his ads in the newspapers recently. He started his own business this past August. The business is called Grocery Butler, and not the typical type of business you'd expect to think of.
It's a professional grocery delivery service. I deliver groceries for people.
That's right. For a small fee, he can do all your grocery shopping, so you no longer have to deal with any other complaining customers or those dreaded long lines. And he's even willing to deliver anywhere in Hunt County. Andrew has had several different jobs since he graduated college, but nothing seemed to satisfy him. He just knew he wanted to make a decent living and try to help people. So he asked himself one simple question.
I said, what kind of services are not being offered? And I thought of this, you know, grocery delivery.
And when it added to the fact that he was already an adequate shopper, Grocery Butler only made sense.
I cook, and I'm used to grocery shopping for my family, so this is not something that I haven't ever done before. I do know how to shop efficiently. I just translated that into working.
The service is great for anyone who, for whatever reason, is unable to go grocery shopping on their own. The Grocery Butler offers friendly, speedy service at your convenience and even comparison shopping. So whether you want the cheapest thing or a specific brand, your needs will be met. And this wasn't something that could be put together so quickly for a young entrepreneur. Much thought and preparation was put into starting this service.
I saved up, and a lot of research, door-to-door polling, and went around asking people, figuring out what people actually needed, if people were willing to pay for this, how much they'd be willing to pay for it.
So after saving up for the last 6 months and doing research on the area and potential customers, Andrew is ready to get things underway.
Hello.
Good morning, Mrs. Crowley.
Andrew, nice to see you.
I have your grocery order for you.
Thank you. Bring it in, please.
Even though he just started, his customers are already extremely grateful and think this service is long overdue in the area.
Absolutely. I've told everybody I talked to how terrific it is.
That's good.
Been needed for years, even working mothers, you know, people that have no time. Mm-hmm.
This is clearly a service that does have a positive impact on the community and will benefit many people. Though he wouldn't oppose expansion in the future, his real focus has been on making a living and lending a helping hand.
I don't have huge goals of nationwide expansion or anything for that. I just want to make a living. I'd like to make an honest job out of this. And hopefully I can make a living while helping people. And helping elderly people is one of the best things you can do.
So keep your eye out in the future, and you just might see our county's newest delivery service, always keeping it classy in slacks and a bow tie, at a store near you. For more information on pricing or how to set up service, simply visit his website at www.groceributler.biz. I'm Ben Kelso, 88.9 KETR.
And thank you, Ben. Now to a feature that was made 2 years ago, but still has major relevance today, so much so that lawmakers have been trying to regulate the issue for some time. Gabby Estrada explains.
Driving is a great privilege given to many Americans here in the States, but driving is not as easy as pie. It takes a lot of responsibility to operate a motor vehicle, and one simple distraction can be extremely chaotic. Since the introduction of horseless buggies and automobiles, drivers have always been a little distracted here and there. One of the most recent distractions of today is using the cell phone and text messaging. Admit it, you've probably done it.
Well, yeah, I have a keypad. I just hold it up in front of my face so I can see the road while I'm texting, too.
Yeah, I pretty much have the keypad memorized as much as I text.
I usually take a look to see if there's any cars around me first.
I keep one hand on the wheel and one hand on the phone.
I try to hold the phone up further up away instead of down close to the radio, so that way I'm kind of like glancing and driving.
But no matter what your technique may be, the danger is still present. A study done by Car and Driver magazine in 2009 showed that using the phone while driving was slowing down reaction times. Unimpaired, the test subject drivers hit the brakes in 0.54 seconds. When the test subjects were legally drunk, it took them an extra 4 feet of traveling to brake. While reading an email, an extra 36 feet. And while texting, it took them an extra 70 feet to hit the brakes. Here in Texas, there is no statewide law that prevents drivers from texting while driving, but there are certain places where cell phone use is strictly prohibited. Trooper Clayton from Texas Highway Patrol tells us more.
You can't use your cell phone if you're in a school zone and the school zone is activated. If the school zone is not posted, if there's not a sign that says no cell phone use, then you can use your cell phone. New drivers for the first 6 months cannot use a cell phone while they're operating a vehicle. We tell people when you're driving a motor vehicle, that's all you need to do is concentrate on driving. If you have distractions like your cell phone, it takes away from what you're supposed to be focusing on the road, the speed limit, people entering and exiting the road. It's very dangerous if you text or talk on the phone while you're driving.
There are a couple of websites and campaigns that are now dedicated to promoting awareness of the dangers. TextResponsibly.org is one of those websites. Other groups want to start with the younger crowd first. Groups like Teens in the Driver's Seat. According to Texas peer group Teens in the Driver's Seat, car crashes kill more young people than any other cause, accounting for nearly half of all teen deaths in America each year. About 6,000 U.S. teens die each year in car crashes. That's the equivalent of a commercial jet loaded with teenagers crashing once every week for an entire year. So, of course, Teens in the Driver's Seat targets teenage drivers in high school by teaching them about the responsibilities that go with operating a motor vehicle. Their website, t-driver.com, also provides story submissions, videos, and more useful information to promote awareness. So, maybe now that you've heard a couple of stats, you'll consider just letting the phone keep ringing and next time you drive the car. I'm Gabby Estrada for 88.9 KETR. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And maybe I love you. Beep, 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 yeah. Thank you, Gabby. You're listening to a special edition of The Lead, a tribute to our students and some of the best features over the years. We'll be right back after this short break on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Coming up on the next Bluegrass Breakdown, we'll be taking a gander at some of the many recent reissues and collections that have found their way into the new Bluegrass CD bins in what would have been Bill Monroe's 100th year on Earth. I'm Dave Higgs, and we'll be spotlighting celebrations relating to the Big Mon, as well as Mac Wiseman, Reno and Harrell, and Carl's story on the next Bluegrass Breakdown.
Sunday evenings at 10 here on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Right about now, this tornadic activity should be there.
We possibly could see a tornado warning for southern Hunt County, Kaufman areas.
Getting the really high winds and the big hail, and it's flooding.
And almost 65,000 people now without power in the North Texas region.
So if you're in their path, you need to take cover immediately.
Non-stop local severe weather coverage, keeping you informed on the storms heading your way. Listen during any severe weather event on your station, 88.9 KETR.
It's just about time for daylight savings. Time to spring forward 1 hour Saturday night before you go to bed. This is your station, 88.9 KETR Commerce.
Welcome back to this special edition of The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm Scott Harvey. Today we're paying tribute to the fine students who've come through the KETR intern program by playing some of the best features produced during that time. Last fall, Jesus Flores took a trip to City Park and Commerce for the newest craze to hit town as part of a fundraising effort to bring a new venue and major attraction to town. He filed this report.
The Commerce Parks Foundation hosted a friendly skate competition and fundraiser, which was open to all skaters of all ages with events for skateboards, rollerblades, skates, and scooters. All the proceeds raised went directly to the Commerce Skate Park Project, a local effort to build a public skate park at Centennial Park in Commerce. We caught up with the driving force behind the Commerce Skate Park Project, President of Commerce Parks and Recreation, Barbara Lennington, who explained to us her reasoning behind wanting to build a skate park in Commerce.
Well, started when my son and Willie kept getting hassled for skateboarding. That old lady that nearly ran them over in a crosswalk called the police, said they were rude, and she was at fault. They were walking on a crosswalk and she nearly hit them.
Ms. Lennington also told us about how she envisions the park.
A little vertical, a little trainy. Terrain, mostly street elements. I want to start it in January to February. We hope to start doing soil testing. It's going to be out at Centennial Park. And we hope to break ground by next spring. I want it built by next August. I want it opened by the first of school. It would be really nice.
I also caught up with one of the competitors, Justin Hall, who explained to me how he got into skating.
I've probably been skating since I was about six, a little bit my big brother, because he taught me how to skate. He pretty much taught me how to ride and how to ollie, and then from there I pretty much just started doing it by myself.
Justin told us that he dreams of becoming a professional skater and elaborated on what having a skate park built in Commerce would mean to him.
A skate park built in Commerce, it would be like super duper duper awesome, because finally you have a good place to skate. You know, you can't just be like pretty much the only good place here to skate is at the college, but you gotta watch out for security and all those dudes. But, you know, having a place to skate without being haggard by, you know, people telling you you can't skate here or, you know, telling you to get off their property. So it's pretty cool.
Back-to-back tournament winner Isaiah Hooten also shared his thoughts about the skate park project.
It'd be really cool to have a park here because there's not a lot of skate places anywhere. And if you skate anywhere, like business-like, you always get kicked out or cops called. So that'd be really cool to have a skate park.
Present at the tournament were many businesses, like Texas Longboard, who were refurbishing skateboards. Vice President of Commerce Parks and Recreation Danny Howard tells us more about the businesses that have helped support the Commerce Skate Park project.
On the back of our t-shirts, got a lot of sponsors. I'm a member of Pi Kappa Alpha. We gave an event out there, the Battle of the Bands. We've been fully committed with it. Different people, Asmus Energy, Lulu's, to speak of a few, Benson Brothers. We've been getting a lot of support.
But that support is not limited to just big businesses. Danny Howard reaches out to anyone, whether you be a Commerce local, a student, or anyone just interested in supporting the Commerce Skate Park project.
And I tell him, I'm like, you know, when you come back as an alumni, bringing, you know, your grandkids, the skate park will still be here. So to be a part of it and get your name on a brick or, you know, sponsorship, you can say that I had something to do with it.
For more information, or if you're interested in supporting the Commerce Skate Park project, you can do so by going to commerceparksfoundation.org. I'm Jesus Flores, 88.9 KETR.
Thank you, Jesus. Sasha DeHart also interned with KETR last fall. She informed us of a local library that is offering some unique programs to guests.
Books, often the first thing people think of when they hear library. When I went to the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library, I saw game systems being played by 10 to 12-year-olds with the children's librarian making and passing out popcorn. Normally, the thought of any noise would get a, shh, this is a library. But the library is the one making it possible for so many programs for children of all ages and programs for even adults. I talked to Paul Phelan, the library director at the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library, on how they are able to support all these different programs.
I readjusted my staff, and I took what would be your normally your adult reference services librarian. Okay. So what I did was I shifted that position to essentially create a program director's position. We have created that position, number one. Number two, we put money in it. One of the things the city let us do was start selling things and create and put that into a donation account. So when you look out front and you see the books for sale out there and the snack machine and we sell water and all that, we make a little bit of profit off all that and it goes into a donation account. So that supplements the budget that we have from the city, because the city does give us, you know, a certain amount of money to do programs like most libraries have, but we're able to make more there. And obviously the Friends of the Library is wonderful. They do a great job for us, not only in giving us money, but in helping us with those kinds of activities. I mean, I have just been blessed to have this group.
I also had the opportunity to talk to the president of the Friends of the Library, Marcia Adams, on what the Friends of the Library does and about the programs that are done at the W. Waldworth Harrison Public Library.
Friends of the Library is a nonprofit organization, and every penny that we make goes to the library. This is probably one of the most active libraries in the county. I'll tell you what I think the key is. And this comes from me as an observer. First of all, we have a director who just rocks. Also, the staff is terrific. They work as a cohesive unit. In the library, we have programs and outreach across the curriculum.
Charlene Allen is a parent who has lived in Greenville for almost 5 years and has been bringing her children to the library for some time. I was able to ask her opinion on the library and the programs they have for children.
Well, I think they're fantastic. I mean, when I first started coming here, there were not as many as there are now, but there were still quite a few, and now it's just phenomenal. It, pretty much every day of the week, there's something for some group of kids, and they literally have a program, at least one program, every day. You know, it's a very family-friendly. They have separate computers for kids as opposed to adults, and those automatically have filters on them, and it's nice.
I got a moment with Lisa Magenheimer, the children's librarian who was in charge of the preteen club program I saw at the library, and was able to ask her about the programs they have for children and teens.
We really start, our youngest main program is story time, and we have kids anywhere from 0 to age 5. Our next level up is a pre-K program that we do here that I haven't seen in any other library, where we only take 3 to 5-year-olds, and we actually do weather, ABCs, numbers, seasons, just everything to get them ready to start pre-K. So it's not just a story time, although they get stories. Then after that, we have several programs for 8 to 12-year-olds. We have a Lego club, a student story time, and we have a computer lab that we have open to that age group. Either they can play for fun or they can get homework help in that. Then we go to preteens, which is 10, 11, and 12-year-olds only. And then we have a teen club, and we play electronic games in there. And, like, today we're watching a movie, and sometimes we, like, cook things in the microwave and make snacks and things like that, just things that teens like to do. And those are all of our regular weekly programs.
For more information on any of the programs from children to adults or about the W. Walworth Harrison Public Library in general, check out the City of Greenville website. I'm Sasha DeHart, KETR News.
Thanks, Sasha. Finally, and fittingly, a feature on students who work. Not uncommon these days for students trying to pay their way through school. From summer 2010, Vicki Christopher has this showcase.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn. And
there are people who work, and there are people who go to school. Then there are people who do both. It seems that people often underestimate what it takes to work and go to school. In fact, many students in college and high school throughout the area know the challenges it takes to do both.
I'm a senior at Commerce High School. By the time I come home from work, I just have time with my son and that's it.
I'm 18 and I'm a senior at Cooper High School. Sometimes it gets really stressful.
I am 22, hopefully almost a senior, and I go to Texas A&M Commerce. It is kind of hard, but I try to keep my classes in the morning and work in the afternoon, and then nighttime is study time. There's not a lot of time to do free stuff. Don't stress.
If working and being a student is so difficult, then why do students decide to work in the first place?
I'm poor, I'm starving, I'm glad broke, I've got no cash to spend.
I'm 17, I go to Cumbia ISD, I'm in 11th grade, because I like money.
I am 21 years old. I'm a senior, and I attend Texas A&M University Commerce. I choose to work because I have spending issues, and in order to support my habits, I have to have a job.
According to an article from collegeboard.com, students who work more than 15 to 20 hours per week often experience decreased school success, which can lead to dropping out completely. It can also limit opportunities to build friendships and explore interests that enhance intellectual and emotional development. Obviously, money is a fueling factor for working while in school, but what else can you gain?
I'd say improving my people skills and networking.
People my age are trying to pull away from their parents, and it gives me a little stability on my own.
Leadership experience and just networking and all that.
I learn a lot of things like responsibility and to be at work on time and to do your job, like actually listen to somebody older.
CollegeBoard.com explains that studies show that students who work are more confident and possess better time management skills than students who are not employed. It offers independence, satisfaction, training, and experience. The bottom line is that students must learn to balance school and work if they want to be successful in either area.
It's one of those days where you get up 8 to 5 is work, and then after that, get the work done for homework, and then when it's done, it's done.
I sleep, but I can say that it's on the bare minimum because some nights I may work from 6 to midnight, and I may have an 8 o'clock class, I may have a test for that class, so when I get off at midnight, I may be studying until like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I may not go to sleep till 5, have to get up at 7 and get ready for class, so don't sleep much.
I put God first in front of everything else, and then I balance my work around my school schedule, and everything falls into place.
I'm hopefully getting a second job, so that'll add some more hours, because I need it.
Thank you, Vicki. And we look forward to our next round of student features, which will begin in just a few short weeks here on The Lead, as part of our newest cohort of students for the spring 2012 semester. That's going to do it for today's program. We hope you enjoyed this look back on some of our top student features over the past few years and can appreciate the role these A&M Commerce students play, not just on Friday mornings, but throughout their entire semester with KETR. This has been The Lead, the exclusive news magazine for Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Texas Matters is coming up next. I'm your host, Scott Harvey. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.